Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
Federal money is at work making the roads in Marion County safer. One project underway is on G71 in Story near Bussey. What equipment is used to build roadways? How do they do it? What are some of the challenges and rewards in this type of work? Let's go in depth with Mark Duncan with Duncan Construction, Bussey. You guys are pretty busy here at the corner in Bussey. What are you doing here?
Well, this is a federal widening project through the DOT, the state of Iowa, and Marion County. It's as well as widening, we're building another road that will tie into the existing Story Street and eliminate these two gravel roads with some vision issues.
Okay, Mark, what's the name of your company?
Duncan Construction.
Duncan Construction. You do a lot of this work?
Not a bunch of this. We do quite a bit of excavation, but this is the biggest road project I've done.
Tell me what pieces of equipment you have here. A lot of us see equipment, but we don't really know what it is. We tend to know front-end loaders, we know backhoes. A lot of people don't even know what a front-end loader is, probably. But what kinds of equipment do you have here?
On site right now, there's four pieces of equipment. The biggest one, which you can see being operated right now, is a D8N Caterpillar bulldozer. And that's what we've done the bulk of the heavy moving with.
And it's a big bulldozer.
Yeah. That machine weighs about 92,000 pounds. So that puts it into perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, big blades, bigger than your normal everyday bulldozer.
Right. And then we've got the smaller dozer, it's a D5, and it's got a different type of blade on it that allows us to do the fine grading. And it's on site. And then one of the other main ones that's really important is a vibratory compactor, and it uses a sheep foot roller that vibrates to bring the soil up to the compaction standards to install the asphalt on top of.
Is that the thing that looks like it has the sort of the peg sticking out of the back and it rolls on it?
Exactly. That's what that is.
Okay. So what's that called again?
It's a couple different terms, depending on who you talk to, but it's a vibratory sheep's foot compactor.
Really vibrates?
Yes. It vibrates as it rolls.
And what's the source of the vibrations? An engine inside?
Or? There's an eccentric hydraulically driven motor inside the wheel.
By vibrating, it compacts the earth?
It does. Under normal, a lot of road conditions, it would just be a sheep's foot just pulled by a tractor that wouldn't have the vibrating feature on it. This particular one is self-driven and has a vibrating feature on it, which enhances the compaction process as well as speeds the process up.
And sheep's foot, what's that?
Well, the sheep's foot is just a name given to it because it implies that the pegs on the end there look like sheep's foot. It's a name that was given to it probably 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Okay, so it leaves little tracks that look like a sheep.
Exactly.
And here I thought it was a technical term or something.
No, it's probably a layman's term that's been applied.
Well, that's pretty interesting. And so how does one learn how to drive this equipment?
Well, there's several ways. Years ago, I'd say 30, 40 years ago, you just basically got on one and had somebody that had experience and showed you the ins and outs, and basically just by running it, you gained the experience to be good at it. Now, you can still do that, but they do offer some schooling in different places that you can take like a two-month course in equipment operation. And I've never been to one of those. I learned from other people in the seat of my pants.
And how long have you been doing it?
Different types of equipment, probably 35 years.
All right, so you're pretty good by now.
Well, hopefully.
Well, one of the things that I always see at construction sites, you see a lot of movement of the equipment going back and forth and from the layman's perspective, there's no rhyme or reason to it. And I'm sure that there is a pattern and a kind of system that you have. Is there any way to sort of share with us that system of, let's say, for example, how do you build up a road, which is like you're doing now?
Well, the basic way that is, for instance, on this particular site was that first thing you do is you move or strip any vegetation, grass, weeds, whatever, and that's usually at a 6 to an 8 inch depth, and that material doesn't compact very well, so you generally strip that off. And if the material under it is already has suitable compaction, well, then you start from there. The reason for the moldable trips is that you have to compact in what we call lifts, and that's the lifts consist of the depth of the soil that you put in at a time. And so that's why you see the constant back and forth action, is that we're with the big D8 dozer, we're bringing the material in and we're placing it, and then we're compacting it at the same time with that big machine. It does a pretty reasonable job of compaction. But then we come in either with the D5 or with the blade on front of the vibratory compactor, and then compact that lift in to meet standards.
Have you brought in dirt from elsewhere here to this?
At this point, we haven't. Part of the project is to bring some dirt in, and due to the conditions we've been under, as dry as it's been, we decided instead of bringing borrow material in from another site, we decided to use the material on the site that we knew would meet compaction specifications. And then if we get to the end and need borrow material or material from another site, we will then bring it in and fill in areas that as needed.
And borrows just like it seems. You borrowed earth from somewhere else.
Yeah, we actually have to pay for it, but it's called, the technical term is borrow, and that's what the engineers use.
Okay, probably because in the old days you'd get it wherever you could and you just borrow it.
I would assume that would be.
Yeah. Actually, you never borrowed it because you never really put it back.
No. Borrow is kind of a term there that doesn't really fit, but that's the one they've always used.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about road construction with Mark Duncan with Duncan Construction. And so he's moving dirt that isn't going to be used up to help build the, what do you call it, the undersurface of the road? What do you call that, the road bed?
Several terms could be used there. A lot of time the term mostly used would be called subgrade.
Subgrade.
And subgrade because when this grade is brought to the proper height, then it'll be compacted, and then on top of that, the paving contractor will come in and add 6 inches of rock, which is called the base, and it'll be a wet down solution. It'll pack in good, or mixture, I should say, and then the approximately 6 to 8 inches of asphalt on top of that then.
So how do you know when you've got it compact enough?
Well, there's different ways of doing that. The way the DOT spec reads on this is when you walk out the earth and to a half inch depth, and what that basically means is that these little knobs you see here, where the compactor is vibrated and compacted it in, when you've got them at a half inch depth, no more than a half inch depth, well, then you're pretty close to the compaction standards. Another way of doing it, and it isn't in the specifications on this job, is where they actually come out and take a compaction test with a testing company that'll determine the percent of compaction.
Do you worry about it getting compacted enough? You're worried that someday you'll drive down this road and see a problem that you didn't compact it enough?
I'm not really too worried about it, no. We've done it long enough that we can visually see typically what kind of compaction we're getting. You know, it comes with experience. And then also when we walk it out with the vibratory compactor, we can measure the depth of those little knobs and we'll see what kind of compaction we're getting.
So the depth of the indentation indicates compaction?
That's an indication of compaction, yes.
Okay, so the deeper it goes, the less compacted it is?
Exactly.
Well, that's pretty interesting, because the more compacted, the less able the equipment is to penetrate.
Right.
All right. And so what's the normal compaction that you look for? Right in front of us, we're at about an inch and a quarter, inch and a half.
Right.
Is that good?
Right. No, we need actually to compact that more. It's a combination of several things to meet compaction specs. And if it's too dry, you can't meet the specifications. If it's too wet, the soil's too wet, you can't meet specifications. So you need to have it at an optimum level. And the other thing that's a factor is the amount of times that you go over it, the trips you make with the compactor. This particular area right here has been compacted about 3 times, and it's probably going to take about 3 more trips across to meet the 1/2 to 3/4 inch specifications.
Okay, now what's this guy doing now? He's moving the earth up?
Yeah, what he's doing there is off the new entrance to Story Street will be 2 driveways, driveways right across from each other that will take care of the 2 houses that are on the gravel roads that will be eventually eliminated. And so he's bringing that up to close to grade now. We will compact that area, but it doesn't need to meet the compaction standards that this does, because those are specified to be just gravel roads. And so the compaction specs aren't quite as tight on those.
Because they'll just be the people going to and from their houses.
Right, with gravel on top as opposed to asphalt.
And by grade, do you mean the angle? What do you mean grade?
Yeah, grade basically means the elevation that is predetermined to be at. Bring it up to grade would be bringing it up to the proper elevation that's specified in the blueprints.
Okay, so grade doesn't have anything to do with angle. It has to do with elevation.
It could have some to do with angle, but typically it means just elevation.
Okay, so how do you know what the elevation is there? How do you know what they want? You got to bring it to the road.
Right, and we've had a engineering firm, a surveying crew out, and they give us rough, or not rough, they've gave us stakes that indicate rough grade. Typically, a surveying crew will give you 2 types of stakes. They'll come out and do the rough surveying, and then you'll go back and do the final surveying. And that's what I'm doing right now, is as opposed to getting the surveying crew back for just a few stakes, I'm setting a few and taking some elevation shots with my laser to determine where we're at.
Okay, so you have a laser transit that you look through to make sure everything's level and at the angle you want?
Yeah, I don't measure the angle with this laser. I just measure elevation. I calculate, and when I do the elevations, then I calculate the angle by the percentage slope that's prescribed in the blueprints.
Percentage of slope, what does that mean?
Well, percentage of slope is the angle that is off of level. If level being 0%, then, and in this case, this widening is 6% all the way around. It's called 6% super elevation.
So it's 6% above to make it drain off?
Right, right. As well as the banking effect for the curve.
Okay, so this curve is going to change here?
Yes, this curve, basically 19 feet of this curve will be at the same angle or percentage of slope that the road is at right now, the existing pavement. And then from that point on, there'll be some transitions into a leveler grade where the turning lanes are.
Okay, and so that's for safety on the curve?
Safety, yes. Yeah, that's what it's for.
Is this whole project for safety?
Yes. This basically how this project got started was from what I've had explained to me, and I could be off on this a little bit, but basically the federal government Division of Transportation gives each state so much safety money a year, and then the states divide it up between the counties, and then it's the county's duty to bring a place or a situation together, and they do some rough surveying, and they submit it to the state, and then the state decides whether it's worthy of the safety money.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about road construction with Mark Duncan with Duncan Construction. This kind of a new road work to take the problems out, I would presume, problems out of the curve and the entryways onto the curve is the same kind of thing that might happen on T-15.
yeah, I don't know whether that project is slated to be done at any time, but yes, it would be the same type of project. The main issues you have on this particular area is where the gravel roads intersect the highway on this curve. They are not at a right angle or 90 degrees to the highway, and so you have vision issues when you pull from the gravel road onto this highway.
Well, yeah, if you pull onto this road one direction, you've got an almost straight on shot to look at what's coming at you, but the other way, you've got to look clear back over your shoulder.
Exactly, and that's an issue particularly with bigger vehicles, trucks per se, because you can't see around them a lot of times, and so you have to come at an angle that could present a problem. And by eliminating those roads, then the other safety factor that's involved here is that you eliminated the gravel roads that aren't 90 degrees to the highway, and so we put a new road in that is 90 degrees. But the other safety factor that's involved is that without these turning lanes involved here, we would have problems with people turning onto the new road.
So the addition of turning lanes is important.
Yes.
Okay, now, I just noticed as this big bulldozer turned around, it has a big hook on the back. What's that for?
That hook is called a ripper, and we don't use it a lot, but basically what that does is if you're into real hard or rocky soil, you sink that ripper into the soil, and it rips the soil and loosens it and allows you to move the dirt more efficiently.
And how wide is that blade? How tall on that piece of equipment?
On that D8, the blade is about 14 foot 4 inches wide, and it's approximately 6 foot tall.
And what's that big grate on top?
That grate is basically just there to keep any cloddy material or rocky material from going over the top and causing an issue with the cylinders that lift the blade.
Now, I bet it's pretty expensive to run one of those.
Yeah, it is. It's a pretty good unit in terms of what it'll push and how many yards an hour you can get out of it. But at full bore, if you're really pushing a full blade width every time, it burns about 14 to 15 gallon of fuel per hour.
14 per hour, diesel fuel.
Diesel fuel, yep.
Well, I forget what diesel fuel is now. We're probably talking $80 an hour to
probably fuel. Off-road fuel. The fuel we use in that would be off-road fuel, so it's not subject to the state tax, which I think is okay. Around 30 cents, 40 cents maybe. So it would be in the fuel. I probably pay around $3.50 for that right now, I'm guessing, per gallon. Yeah, it would be in the $60 probably.
$60.
Right.
And then does driving equipment pay well?
Yeah, typically it pays pretty good. It depends on the project you're on, but this project does not have a prevailing wage on it. And a prevailing wage is where the government or the state of Iowa has the state divided up into districts and determine what the wage should be for each thing that you do on that job. So, yeah, it pays pretty good.
So it's a good line of work to get into?
I enjoy it. Of course, I own the company, and so the prevailing wage doesn't affect me, but it affects any employees that I have, if it's in place on the job.
So prevailing wage could be good for the employee. Maybe the taxpayer isn't so happy about it. How does that work?
It could be. It's usually good for the employee, but it could be a little bit negative for the contractor. But typically, the contractor knows if the prevailing wage is in effect on the job and figures that into his bid. As far as the taxpayer is concerned, it's the two-edged sword. It's how you look at it. Yes, it's taxpayers' money, but on the other hand, if the employee is making good money and spending the money in the area, well, then that stimulates the economy, too. So.
Yeah, and that counties that have higher-paid employees tend to be counties that are doing better.
Exactly.
Is there anything about your line of work and what you do that the general public probably doesn't know about that you think it's important that you know or that they know or that just something that they might find interesting that I don't know enough to even ask you?
I guess with this type of work, the public seems to be pretty critical on how we're spending our money, and in some cases that's justified. But I think that what they would need to know in a project like this is that basically, this is for a pretty good cause. I mean, I think the safety factor here and what we will gain by this will be positive. I think maybe the other factor that the average person doesn't really realize is what it takes to get one of these projects going, you know, not only from the standpoint of what I do, but the engineering and all that's involved before we ever move a yard of dirt.
Weeks, months, years of preparation?
This particular project is probably a year and a half from conception to now.
And we just think you just pull up and start moving dirt, don't we?
Right, right. And that's not the case. Some of the other work we do is we reclaim some of the old strip pits and strip mines from the coal mining era. And the engineers have told me that sometimes they're 3 years from when they start a project till we actually start moving dirt. And the other factor that the public doesn't realize is that those projects typically cost as much to get to the point of moving dirt as it costs to move the dirt.
Thanks to Mark Duncan for contributing to the program. For KNIA, KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.